So today we come on to mudita, and mudita bhavana. Mudita is the appreciation of the true happiness of others. It's rejoicing in their qualities, their success, their happiness. It's usually translated as sympathetic joy, but Buddha Ghosha calls it altruistic joy, which I think is very good. And mudita is when you're able to take delight in, to rejoice in the qualities or the success or the happiness of others without begrudging it in any way. And once again, we don't set out to develop mudita. We develop metta, and then we bring metta into contact with another person's happiness, their success, their qualities, and so on. And if our metta is strong enough, it will become mudita. So metta plus happiness is mudita. And it balances karuna, which you could see. So you could see the two as the dark and the light side of life. And it's very close to rejoicing in merits. And I think we could do much more rejoicing in merits. Recently, in the last few months, I've been at a couple of sessions of rejoicing in merits. And it's been done really intelligently and perceptively and appropriately. And it just creates such a fantastic atmosphere. And it's so pleasurable, you know. And there's so many things we abstain from as Buddhists. But here's something that can give us a lot of pleasure, but is also completely wholesome, completely positive. And it just has an uplifting effect on everybody present if it's done well. So mudita is very like that. So if you've experienced rejoicing, then you in that sort of way you've probably experienced mudita, and you've also probably experienced it in the metta bhavana practice when you've brought to mind some of these good qualities. So it's not just confined to Buddhist circles. It can be rejoicing much more broadly than that. Wherever you see goodness, happiness, success, as long as it's not skillful, you can rejoice in it. So it could just be somebody's face lighting up with a radiant smile. It could be just ordinary human acts of goodness and kindness, generosity. It could be rejoicing in somebody's skill. I really noticed this with the Olympics recently. Just the amount of skill, and it was uplifting to watch it. Also, I really like seeing live jazz. And I like seeing live jazz. One of the reasons I like seeing it is because of the delight that jazz musicians take in each other's playing, particularly when they're improvising. And somebody does a really good improvisation, and you can see the other musicians just rejoicing in that, just really happy in that person's skill, particularly with black American musicians. You could rejoice in doctors, people working to alleviate suffering. I was talking to somebody recently at Vajraloka, a woman who was going over and helping with refugees in Calais, you know, bringing clothing and sleeping bags and tents and so on over to Calais. And you can rejoice in that. You can rejoice in acts of heroism, maybe someone diving into a rough sea to save a child or something like that. And it doesn't matter if we couldn't do it ourselves. There are lots of things we couldn't do it ourselves. I think this is really important. It's so easy to slip into comparing. We don't have to do all those things to us for ourselves. The object of mudita is the other person's qualities. We don't need to compare it with our own. And so although we can't do it, we can rejoice in that. Okay, and then there's the happiness that comes from spiritual practice, from turning skillful states of mind into skillful habits until those habits become completely spontaneous, until they become an expression of our being. And as I've said and as we've seen, happiness isn't something that happens just by chance. Happiness arises in dependence upon causes and conditions. It arises in dependence upon skillful states of mind. And it's a natural law. It happens quite naturally. If we behave skillfully, our consciousness just starts to open out in a different sort of way. We become a different sort of person. And it's different from pleasure in this sense, because pleasure also arises in dependence upon causes and conditions. But in a way, it just happens to us. Pleasure is something that just happens to us. And it arises, and the conditions change, and it passes, and sometimes it changes into its opposite. So yes, pleasure is good, but happiness is something deeper. And I think it's something to do with having meaning and values in your life. And I'm reminded of a friend of mine in this situation, a friend of mine called Kamin, who was at a beginner's class in Norwich. And the usual question came up, since you've been practicing Buddhism, have you become happier? And he really thought about it, and he said, I can't really say that I've become happier since I've been practicing the Dharma, but I can say that my life is more based on meaning and values, and that it has more meaning. So in a way, I think you can see happiness really as a sort of byproduct. I don't think you can really set out to develop happiness. I think in a way, if you just set out to develop happiness, it's sort of doomed in a way. But you can bring your life more in accordance with reality. You can bring your life more in accordance with the Dharma, and you can start behaving skillfully and developing qualities, and then happiness will follow, just like in the first verses of the Dhammapada. So happiness usually manifests itself in qualities, as positive qualities, as skillful qualities. So as our skillful action becomes, as it were, the sort of guiding star of our life, as we base our life more on values and on meaning, we start to habitually behave skillfully. And as we begin to behave skillfully, our consciousness starts to go down particular channels, and we start to develop particular qualities, particular skillful qualities. They probably just start off as ordinary human qualities. And in a way, spiritual qualities grow out of just positive, ordinary, healthy human qualities. Qualities like patience, like consideration, like kindness, generosity, clarity, and so on. And the thing is that we develop these qualities. Most of the qualities we develop, most of the spiritual qualities that we develop in relationship with other people. So we need other people. I'd say it's impossible to develop spiritually without close contact with other people. We can't do it just through the internet. We can't do it online. We can't do it by Skype. We need to actually come into face-to-face contact with other people. And we need an intensity of contact with other people. And this is the importance of the Sangha. And this is the importance of the order. The order was created so that we could come into close contact with each other. And that's how we grow. We grow through contact with each other. We need each other. I think in the Bodhicaryavatara, it says that one should value all beings and the Buddhas equally. And if one was to choose, one should value all beings. more highly, because we really need other people. And we need intensity. You know, we need intensity of contact with other people. We need to meet much more intensively. And this is why Bhante created the institutions of the order. This is why he created communities, why he created Right Livelihood projects, why he created centres. It's so that people, like-minded people, people who have shared values and shared ideals, can come into vital mutual responsiveness with each other. And that's where we learn. That's where we learn about what it is to live the spiritual life. We learn through encouragement, we learn through challenge, we learn through support, most of all we learn through friendship, we learn through knocking the rough edges off each other, we learn through sparks flying. That's what creates Sangha. And we learn to take down the barriers. It's only through being in actual living contact with each other, intensive living contact with each other, that we take down the barriers. That we go to areas that we wouldn't normally go to if we were left to ourselves. The areas that the Dharma needs to enter into, those dark corners where the Dharma needs to actually come into, that it's so easy just to keep private. We need to expose all that to each other, and we need to develop the trust, the friendship, in order to do that. And it's out of that as well that we develop spiritual qualities. We develop qualities, we grow spiritually because we need to. Because we set out to develop the Bodhisattva ideal, we set out to help others, we come into contact with them, and we realise there are things that we do that actually get in the way. And we're not going to do that if we're on our own. We're only going to do that if we come into really intense contact with other people. When I moved to Sweden, this is a number of years ago, about 20 years ago, maybe more, I had all these ideas about what I was going to do, you know, like how I was going to spread the Dharma all over Scandinavia and all sorts of things. And I had lots of energy, I had lots of enthusiasm. But when I got there, I was impatient, you know, and I was so impatient for things to happen. I was so impatient with people that they couldn't grow. They couldn't grow in their own way because I already had an idea of how they should be. So I had to let go of all that and I had to develop patience. And we develop qualities much more when we need to. We won't just do it in our own private universe. We do it in relation to other people. That's how we grow. So we need other people to grow spiritually. And Bhante's always preferred this language of growth. That's always been his preference. And he's often said that it's much better to think in terms of growth without getting too caught up on the metaphysics of what grows. That will sort itself out later. And I think maybe one of our greatest joys as well in spiritual life is seeing other people grow. I mean, I feel this very strongly. This is why I live at Padmaloka. This is why I live in this community. One of the main reasons that I live here is to see other people grow and to see the Dharma actually having an effect on people and to see them change, to see the qualities develop. And just like in the White Lotus Sutra, where it talks about the Dharma as being like a rain cloud and rain falling down on all beings equally, and living beings being like plants and each growing in their own way. That's really where the magic is. That's the greatest thing that we have. That's the most precious thing. It's actually seeing the Dharma working in ourselves and in other people, and seeing other people grow, seeing them develop qualities, seeing them becoming more themselves in their own particular unique way according to the Dharma. And if you're involved in that, if you're deeply involved in other people, after a while, you start to forget about your growth and other people's growth, or where you are and where other people are. That is unimportant. The important thing is you see growth. You see people growing. It doesn't matter so much whether it's you, whether it's other people. In a sense, qualities are transpersonal. In the spiritual community, in the Sangha, qualities are transpersonal. It doesn't matter whether you have the wisdom, whether somebody else has the wisdom, whether you have the most love, whether you're the best speaker. It doesn't matter. As long as they're there in the Sangha, and as long as they're in the service of the Dharma and the service of all beings. So, probably, in the mudita bhavana, this is what we should be looking for. This is what we should be trying to come into contact with. We should be looking for growth. We should be trying to come into contact with growth, connecting with other people's growth, and being able to rejoice fully in that. And if we have enough metta, if we have enough mudita, we'll be able to do that. And in a way, these Brahma Viharas, they're the lifeblood. They're the lifeblood of the Sangha. Because if the Brahma Viharas are flowing within the Sangha, then it will be a true Sangha. And they'll be rejoicing. They'll be rejoicing in growth. They'll be rejoicing in success. If somebody else gets invited to Gukkyaloka next year, someone in your community, your friend, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just important that somebody goes. And if you have enough metta and mudita, you can just rejoice very fully in that. Some time ago, we had a retreat, and we were all giving talks, and there were about six of us giving talks, me included, and we were all a bit worried, how our talk would match up with everybody else's. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as the retreat's good, as long as the talk's good, it doesn't matter. And I'm also reminded of something Maitreya Bandhu said. He said, when you're teaching at a centre, you have a centre team. And I think also working in a team is a very good way for developing appreciation of other people's qualities. When you're in a centre, you have a team. And there's always one person up front. But it doesn't really matter who's up front. Who's up front is interchangeable. What's important is that people get the Dharma. And very, very interesting, you know. Like I meet a lot of people from Sheffield. And I can mention him because he's not here. When I talk to people in Sheffield, they've got some fantastic Dharma teachers in Sheffield. But what people tell me again and again is the reason they came back to the centre is because a Moggavamsa was on the door. And they met a Moggavamsa and he just completely welcomed them and made them feel special. And that is what is important. Those normal human qualities, people meeting that. Like, I don't know if you remember when you first came to a centre. My experience was, someone's listening to me for the first time. You know, I've never been listened to before. Whenever I've talked to people before, they've always just waited to get their bit in. But here it was, you know, people are actually listening. They're actually interested in what I had to say. So that's the sort of thing they're the sort of qualities we develop, those interpersonal qualities, and that's how we grow. And whatever wisdom we have will come out. Whatever wisdom we have will come out. And it's very interesting. And by wisdom, I mean our deepening understanding of the Dharma. And our deepening understanding of the Dharma in its whole breadth and whole depth. A deeper penetration of the whole being into the whole breadth and the whole depth of the Dharma. And it's very interesting because if you look at these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas around the room, they've each got a body aura and they've got a head aura. And you notice that the body aura is much bigger than the head aura. And the body aura is their punya. It's the qualities that they develop in the service of helping all beings. That's what the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas do. So they, over lifetimes, they develop all these qualities, all these skills, all this skillful means, which enables them to be more effective in helping living beings. And then around the head is the wisdom aura. And the wisdom aura is smaller, and it's important. But in order for wisdom to be attractive, it depends a lot on how it's communicated. And what's often said is that wisdom is like a precious jewel, a very beautiful jewel. But the jewel needs to be in a perfect setting. If you can imagine a beautiful silver setting for the jewel, holding the jewel, with beautiful sort of filigree work and so on. And that's the punya. That's the body aura. So those are all the qualities. And to communicate wisdom fully, you need to be attractive. You need to be attractive to people. People need to find you fascinating. When they come into contact with the Dharma, they need to find you attractive, they need to find you fascinating, and then they're open to what you've got to say. So traditionally we develop both together. We develop punya and we develop jnana. Okay. More I can say, but I'm going to move on. So I want to go into the practice now. And as usual, we start off in the first stage by developing metta. And we develop a basis of metta within ourselves. We connect with that current of metta, current of Brahma Viharas that we've been building up over the last few days. And then in the second stage, we bring to mind what we call a boon companion. And boon means something like extremely useful, helpful, beneficial, a blessing or benefit. So basically, we bring to mind somebody who we feel is a real benefit to us, a real blessing to us to be in contact with. And it should be somebody whose positive qualities are very obvious, very easy to see. And here I'm thinking particularly of a teacher, or a preceptor, or a Kalyana Mitra. It might not be somebody you know very well. For example, it might be Bhante. You may not feel you've got a very strong personal relationship with him, but you can still bring him to mind. And you just rejoice very fully in them. So, as usual, you connect with metta, you take in the whole person, and then you bring to mind their qualities, their happiness, their success. And if you wanted to, you could use some sort of phrase like may your happiness increase, or may you be full of joy. And thirdly, you bring to mind a good friend, and this is more like a peer, but it should be somebody whose good qualities it's fairly easy for you to see. And again, you just do the same thing. You connect with them, with the whole person, with metta. You bring their good qualities to mind, you bring their success to mind, and you rejoice in that. The fourth stage is a neutral person. And on retreat, this is very good because you can see people on the retreat, and probably quite a lot of the people on this retreat are neutral people to you. So maybe just choose somebody you've seen around the retreat centre, and maybe you just notice one thing, one specific thing that maybe you just notice their smile or their helpfulness or whatever. And just rejoicing in that. The fifth stage is the enemy. So again, bring to mind the whole person, acknowledge what the difficulty is, and then just ask, is there more? Is there more to them than that? And maybe use your imagination and try to see them through the eyes of a friend. Presumably they've got friends. They may even be a friend of yours in other circumstances. And just see what their friend would see in them, see the qualities that their friend sees in them, and rejoice in that. And if they're practicing the Dharma, then you're off to a good start. That's something to rejoice in. And watch out for subtle aversion in this. What I mean by subtle aversion is you don't particularly dislike them, but you're not going to really fully acknowledge the good in them. You hold back from fully acknowledging the good. And then last stage, breaking the barriers, bringing yourself and the other four people to mind and rejoicing more equally in the merit of each, including your own merits here. And then just expanding outwards and rejoicing in whatever good, whatever positive, intelligent actions you see performed in the world. Okay. So, as with the other Brahma Viharas, there are near enemies and far enemies. And the near enemy is what's called vicarious satisfaction. I'll translate that for you. So vicarious means living something through another person. So vicarious satisfaction could be something like hero worship. It could be putting somebody on a pedestal. It could be a sort of reflected glory. You know, there's this fantastic person and they're your friend. You know, it could be name dropping, all those sort of things. Maybe it's a necessary stage that we go through. You know, maybe it's a necessary stage of positive projection we have. But the antidote to it is to engage more fully with the real person. And you probably need to do this on and off the cushion. And one way of doing that is just helping them out, helping them with their work, working alongside them. I think there's something a bit funny about the way we meet in Tree Ratna. You know, we just meet for coffee and so on. And you know, you have your 10 minutes or half an hour, or an hour or whatever it is, once a fortnight. And, you know, it's quite a sort of institutionalized way of meeting people. And that sort of maintains a sort of projection sometimes. And I think it's very good to break that down. Just go and help people. Like if they're order members you respect, or people you look up to, just get to them in an ordinary way. And a way of doing that is to relate through the medium of work, of working alongside them, helping them with their work. But also, I think the real test is, do you just want to enjoy that person's merits from a distance, or do you want to emulate them? So if it's a real mudita, you'll probably want to emulate those qualities yourself and develop those qualities yourself. And again, that's another way that we grow. We need people around who we can look up to so that we can emulate their qualities. That's how we find out about how to live the spiritual life. Okay, the far enemy is envy. And it's quite a difficult one, envy. Because it's difficult to own up to. There's nothing really good about it. You, in a way, you see somebody as better than you, and you resent them for it. So it's quite difficult to own up to, particularly when there's a lot of pride involved, which there usually is. But unless you have sufficient metta, you're going to feel envy. It's quite normal. Unless you have sufficient metta, you're going to experience envy. So the key really is, it probably means you need to develop more. You need to develop more metta and more mudita. And also just get into a habit of rejoicing in people. You may have to actually take this on as a practice at first. You know, when you see people doing something well, whatever it is, just actually making it a practice to go and rejoice in that, to acknowledge that. And there's a whole sort of family of near enemies around that, you know, like comparing oneself with other people, competitiveness, all that sort of thing. And, probably you have to work more broadly on this. We have to work more broadly on this than just in meditation. And I suggested working in a team, living with other people, so that you can be around other people more. Being with people who are positive and who are naturally inclined to rejoice in each other's qualities and who are encouraging and who encourage you. Sometimes people feel they need a lot of encouragement themselves before they can actually start to rejoice in other people. And friendship. Friendship, of course. Okay, so just to finish off, each of the Brahma-viharas has a particular quality. You probably notice with Karuna, it can be quite somber in a way. Maybe somber isn't quite the right word, but quite sobering and deep. And mudita is very bright and joyful, and it's usually associated with the Buddha Ratnasambhava, who's the Buddha of abundance, the Buddha of riches. And it's really through developing our inner riches that we're able to fully enter into mudita.